Blog. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Raziel Suarez. He is the author of Encyclopedia of Roman Imperial Coins. Now, Raziel discovered ancient coins on eBay about 10 years ago and switched careers to bring the joy of collecting dirty Roman coins to Middle America, as he says. Well, within a year, his company, Dirty Old Coins, was selling hundreds of thousands of Roman coins to homeschoolers and gift shops across the country. Sensing a need for an easy-to-understand how-to manual for these coins, he dedicated himself for the next few years of writing the most complete book on the subject that is available. And just this past few months, the second edition of the Encyclopedia of Roman Imperial Coins was finally ready for legions of hobbyists. Hi, Raziel.
Hello, Irene.
Well, this is just a real pleasure for me to talk to you because for a couple of things, I'm really interested in this topic and finding out more information from you, but also the fact that I actually reviewed your book, and my goodness, at near 1,500 pages, this is quite an encyclopedia. And, I mean, the research that obviously went into this is phenomenal. How long did it take you to write this book?
Oh, it took a good 5 years on top of the first edition's work that was another 2 years. This was a full-time job. Thousands of hours went into it, but it was fun.
Well, I can imagine, yes, and I'm sure it was thousands of hours. And obviously, you know, the research that had to go into this is what I guess amazes me is that this information obviously is out there somewhere, and what you had to do is pull it all together. Now, these coins go back a long time, and it amazes me that these coins are still around.
Yeah, the reason why is because the Romans made millions and millions of these coins. They had a very vibrant economy, and as time went on, some of these coins were lost, and some actually were buried purposely by their owners, just trying to hoard them. And if they would die or forgot their location, then that's it. They were lost forever. And then they were found nowadays with metal detectors.
Really? And so where are a lot of these found? In what areas?
All over Europe. Wherever the Romans had presence, that's where they would be found today. And some are found right still on the surface of the ground, and others are found, you know, up to several feet buried underneath. But
Were these just buried in the ground as coins in a box or in some type of container, or were they in caves?
Usually, yes. Usually they would, if they were buried purposefully, they would be put in a pot, ceramic of some sort, and in there could fit up to thousands of coins. And in fact, just recently, something like 200 pounds worth of coins were found in England. And these are being found to this day.
So what was the first purpose of actually burying these coins, the main purpose?
Well, like I said, if an owner had many coins, and back then they didn't have paper bills, so all your money would be in coins, and they wanted to store it or they wanted to keep it out of somebody else's reach, the best way to do it would be to plaster it up over your wall in your house or bury it out in the backyard. And that's what a lot of times they did, and except if they would die or if they forgot the location or for any other number of reasons they don't recover those coins, then it's left for us to find them. And a lot of times farmers will be plowing their fields and out pops a few coins, and it all leads back to this one location, you know, dating back 1,500, 2,000 years ago of when this person buried those coins.
It's amazing. And I guess probably because these coins were not really exposed to the elements, they're in really good condition.
Exactly. And a lot of them, if they're silver, they look exactly the same way they would have looked the day they went to the ground, gold as well. Copper is a little bit harder, but they keep a nice toning to them, the patina that they get, and the, you know, usually very beautiful greens and hues of different colors. But normally, yeah, they will keep very well preserved, and people don't normally associate, you know, something this old with being so new looking.
I guess I just had to smile when you said that, you know, people died off or they just forgot where they buried them. And I suppose that really, you know, is really true, because maybe the parents were trying to hide the money away from the children. So, because maybe there were, you know, spenders, and then all of a sudden the father or mother die, and it's like nobody knows where that money is.
It could have been any of a number of reasons. A lot of times it would have been, they think maybe soldiers would go off to war and, you know, leave their prized possessions buried underground. You know, you don't, any number of ideas that can come to mind, there's a reason. And I'm sure up until not too long ago, people would bury their wealth, and you can find silver dollars here in the States that have been buried by their owners for the same reasons. You know, people would just wall them up inside their own homes.
Well, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, my grandparents are no longer alive, but they didn't trust the banks.
Exactly. And back then there weren't banks, so they didn't have a choice.
Exactly. When you're talking about 1,500 years ago, that is for sure. So what amazes me is, because these are so old, and yet, you know, I looked in your book and I looked on eBay, and they're cheap. They're probably selling for less than what the metal is worth itself.
It's amazing, yes. And some of them, I've often wondered, how is it that, you know, they go for a dollar or two each? And again, the reason comes back to there being so many coins that have been recovered in Europe, and now they're just being sold on the market.
So are they actually authentic?
All of them are. Well, not all of them.
Right.
But the vast majority of these very cheap ones are. It's just not even worth for the counterfeiter to fake a dollar coin.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they do, it's immediately obvious, because somebody somewhere will notice that there's two that are exactly alike. And that can't be in an ancient coin, because they're all handmade, and each one will be a little different. It's not like modern coins.
Right, where they are pressed and they all look the same. So what all in your research did you find out as to how these coins were actually made? You say that they were all handmade. So I suppose there were specific tools and casts of some sorts?
Well, nobody knows 100% for sure how they were made, but the easiest solution to make something that looks like an ancient coin is just to get a hammer and anvil, and then, you know, just put two dies together and take a whack at it. Of course, the Romans themselves wouldn't have wanted to let on how to make coins, so that everybody and their brother could have made their own coins. Yet, that seems to be the most reasonable assumption.
Mm-hmm. So I'm also wondering, too, is, you know, the ethics of acquisitions of these coins, is there anything out there in the community that actually, you know, is sort of a governing body?
There isn't, and there's quite a lot of controversy nowadays, because some countries will want to recall the coins that are out there already, or impose restrictions on the trade of all antiquities, not just coins.
Mm-hmm.
However, coins are a little bit different, because they were meant to circulate, and they weren't, even though they were each one of a kind, they all come from a cookie cutter, so to speak. So you can't really claim that it's a unique, in the sense that the design is unique, you know, and a coin that was made in Rome may well travel all the way to London or Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
and who owns that? So that's a little bit different from the standard antiquity, you know, which is a one-of-a-kind thing made by an artist. However, there's also millions of them, and no museum in the world can hope to even put a small amount up for display. So museums themselves often don't want them, or if they do have them, they don't really know what to do with them beyond just putting them in a box somewhere, and often they will rot away. So there's a lot of controversy, and it's a very interesting subject that people feel very passionate about, for sure.
Well, I can understand that, it's for sure. So let's just consider that some of the listening audience today are just wanting to really get into this. They have an interest, and they're wannabe hobbyists. So where do they start?
The easiest way to start is how I started myself. Probably go on eBay and look for a few coins that are $2 or $3 each, and that will give them the feel of what it is to have an ancient coin in your hands. It may or may not spark an interest farther down the road. And for that kind of outlay of cash, you know, you're not risking very much if you don't like it. From there, chances are those few people who really like the hobby will like to get some more information, and there's plenty out there on the internet, as well as books and forums and so on. And there's a very well developed community online for people who are interested in this field.
So
that's the way to get started, at least.
Yeah, and so I imagine this community also does trading and buying and selling from each other too.
Absolutely, yes. There's all sorts of different groups that cater to people who are specialists or people who really are just starting out. There's a little of everything, and Google is everybody's friend nowadays. That's one way to get started, and it can be very fun and addicting, that's for sure.
Well, I can well imagine, and especially if, as a new collector and all of a sudden you get a coin that maybe is a little bit more rare than all the others that there are millions of, it's like it pulls you in. And
That's one of the big draws of the so-called clean coins that my company, Dirty Old Coin, started. And what happens is you get these coins for only a dollar or two each, and they come covered in dirt. And this isn't the kind of dirt that washes off in the faucet. It takes a while for it to loosen up because it's like concrete stuck to the coin. So people are trying to restore the coin, not just for the purpose of learning about who it might be underneath, but because that dollar coin could be worth, $500 or, any amount of money. It all depends on who the emperor winds up being after it's restored. So that's a big hook, and it gets a lot of people involved in Roman coins, after which, they could move on to other things, or maybe they don't like it at all. But at least it's a reason why it draws in thousands of newcomers to the field every year.
So, Raziel, you mentioned restoration. And so what type of restoration is actually, suggested? Because I imagine there's a point where you stop.
Sure. And it's a subject that not everybody agrees on. Some people, the purists will be like, leave it alone, don't do anything with it. But realistically, when the coin is completely uncovered and, in a crusted up accretions, it's like concrete.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really appreciate any detail of the coin. But the rule of thumb is you should stop trying to remove the dirt once you can basically see all the detail on the coin, and certainly not try to remove the patina from the bronze coins.
Mm-hmm.
Silver is not so much as an issue because you don't really come across that many silver coins that are unrestored already. Chances are, if you're going to buy them, somebody else has done that part.
So how do you actually begin restoring? Are there specific tools or some type of solution that you would soak the coin in?
Actually, it's very simple. For most coins, all you need to do is soak them in water and then scrub it off with an old toothbrush. under the faucet with some dish detergent, and that's really, for 90% of the coins, that's all that needs to be done. However, it doesn't happen all at once. You will leave them in the water, and it only will soften up a little tiny bit of the of that dirt. And over time, you know, you get more and more of it off until hopefully you can get all of the dirt off. You can also, other people can get a microscope and carefully pry away at it with, you know, a toothpick or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the technology is pretty low tech and getting the job done. It's more the patience than anything else.
I can see that. And, you know, obviously it has to be a toothbrush that is soft because otherwise there could be damage to the coin.
Yes, and they are unfortunately very easy to damage if you try to rush a job and take a Brillo pad to it or something like that, and you'll just ruin it.
Oh, I'm sure. And then, of course, the value goes down. You know, you have a dollar coin and now it's maybe worth 25 cents after
yeah,
time and effort.
Yeah, that's bad. Right. So that's why we recommend that you start out with like broken coins or something like that so people can get up to speed that way.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Rafael Suarez, author of Encyclopedia of Roman Imperial Coins. And as you've heard so far, Rafael is an extremely knowledgeable collector and is willing to share his knowledge with us. So stay tuned because there's so much more that Rafael will be talking to us. Those of us that are seasoned collectors and those of us that are just getting a little spark of interest, so stay tuned. Oh, and by the way, Rafael's website for this book is dirtyoldbooks.com. So you mentioned broken coins. Are they of any value?
They don't may not have a value in the marketplace unless it's a very rare coin, but the value is still in the learning process for those people who are enjoying the restoration process.
So this reference guide, the Encyclopedia of Roman Imperial Coins, which you call ERIC too because it's the second volume, it teaches you how to identify. And so if you could just kind of go over a few steps of how you can actually identify a coin.
Well, it's actually, with the case with Roman coins as opposed to Greek coins or the coins of some other culture, the one thing that Roman coins have that makes it a little bit easier is that they have a Latin alphabet, so you can actually read what's on the coin. And almost every Roman coin will have the portrait of the reigning emperor. So if you recognize the face, you know, from a statue or another coin that you already know, that makes identifying that coin a lot easier. But if not, you can simply read what it says. And the Romans did have some peculiarities as far as how they wrote, but nothing that a beginner can't learn inside of 5 minutes.
Well, you know, I'm looking at this encyclopedia and looking at the coins. And it just amazes me that if these are individually hand done, how articulate the piece actually is. I mean, the letters, the, you know, the image, whatever, there's the head of one and then there's a full figure of another. And so it just amazes me how articulate these people were. And it must have taken a long time to just create one coin.
Well, no doubt. I mean, amazing is the correct word that these ancient engravers were putting so much work into, you know, pieces that were not considered art, but, you know, it's just considered something mundane, you know, to think that nowadays an engraver can spend a year on a single coin design, whereas back then it was just their daily task and they had to do it for mass production. So it's believed that there were many such artists who were, you know, learned the art of engraving, and it was just an assembly line. And in the case of even older coins, you know, the masterpieces of the Greeks who made big silver and gold coins, some actually signed the dies so that you would know who these master engravers were. And they are art. I mean, it's just beautiful amount of rendering of detail.
Mm-hmm. So also, at that particular time, let's go back to the Roman coins, when they were first made, how was the value put on them at that time?
That was accorded by some unwritten rule. I mean, people knew that a silver piece that was more or less the size and was going to be called a denarius, let's say, and that was by common agreement what everybody would refer to. And of course there were weight ranges, and it was fairly precise, and as far as also the fineness of the silver, and there was a little more leeway concerning the copper coins because they weren't as valuable, so, you know, it could be a little heavier, a little lighter, and still people would know by the size and the heft of the coin what value everybody agreed what it was actually worth. And, of course, there was also the gold, which was very tightly controlled as far as the purity and the weight over time. Those didn't circulate as much because those were, you know, very valuable coins. So they were basically big purchase items.
So now, the values on them now, you know, some of them like eBay, you can buy them for a dollar. And it just, I would like to know how this is valued now. I mean, how would I know, or how does the next person know as a collector that there is maybe a million of this particular coin, or maybe there's only 1,000, or maybe there are only 5? How do we find out?
The way to find out is basically that's what the purpose of the book was, to try and assign a value to them. Nobody knows for sure what they were worth back then. However, you can sort of tell obliquely by the amount of coins and the size that perhaps they weren't worth that much. These, I'm talking again about back in the day, the copper ones, the small ones. Inflation had put so much pressure on the Roman economy that they needed to make lots and lots of cheap coins. We can imagine that they didn't have very great purchasing power back then. That's just our speculation, just going by what can be determined.
So besides eBay and auctions, where else can a person that just wanting, let's say a newbie wanting to get into this, where would they be able to buy coins?
Well, there's a lot of dealers online as well. And, you know, if you happen to be in a major city, chances are that a coin dealer that is local will carry at least some ancient coins. In Europe, every coin dealer carries ancient coins because that's part of their heritage.
Right.
Here in the U.S., they're not as common, but they're still quite available, and it's not hard to find somebody who will carry ancient Roman coins or coins from any ancient culture.
Mm-hmm.
They're easy to find. It's not hard at all.
Oh, okay. So I'm looking, I just flipped over to a page here, and you've got a coin, and it says it's rare, and the rank is 99th. Now, eBay, you found it for $34, but for auction, it went to $3,973. It's like, whoa, that's quite a difference.
There is quite a difference, and the way that information is collated maybe presents a bit of a a picture that is not exactly accurate. And what happens on eBay is that people will sell, usually trade in coins that are not very valuable because, you know, these are just regular people instead of dealers trying to move high-end merchandise. Whereas the dealers, the established numismatic firms, will concentrate on coins that have a much higher value. They can't afford the time to print up an auction for a coin that's worth $20. It just doesn't make any sense. So there's two tiers, and that's why I wanted to keep that information separately. And those are just averages. So if you have, you know, 10 coins that are averaging out to, you know, up to $10,000 or $20,000, and then you look on eBay, well, you're not going to find any gold coins for that emperor on eBay. So that's why the tiers are separate like that.
Okay. So seasoned collectors obviously will love this book because everything is so concise. And, I mean, I'm just amazed at the information that's in here, and I just really commend you on putting this all together. And I'm wondering, you know, this is great for a seasoned collector, and I'm wondering if you can just kind of talk to those people that are listening as to the benefits of this book and why you wrote it specifically, let's say, for the seasoned collector.
Sure. I'd like to think that it's as good for the seasoned collector as it is for the newer collector. Newer collector needs a way to get up to par. And unfortunately, the books that are out there are not usually very user-friendly or they're not very up-to-date. So the book addresses that concern for the newer collectors. For the seasoned collectors, it is, again, about the conciseness. It's locating the information you need quickly. And the available literature for the seasoned collector tends to be very big, and it's not very accessible, so that you have, you know, many different books. The design of this particular book was such that it makes finding that information quickly, and it's a springboard onto, you know, more specialized literature.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it serves the seasoned collector.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is great. Gosh, as I mentioned before, this is quite an undertaking. It just it blows my mind to think that.
Well, it took a lot out of me.
I can well imagine, but wow. In the end, I'm sure that when you got that first box of printed books, it was just such an elating feeling.
Oh, it was quite an achievement, and I won't say it was a light thing. it took a long time to make, and I'm just glad it's finally out there and that it's being well received so far.
Mm-hmm. And so, Raziel, the book, Encyclopedia of Roman Imperial Coins, tell us and our listening audience where they can find this book.
It can be located right on my website. You can go to dirtyoldbooks.com. That's the tongue-in-cheek name that I gave the publishing arm of my company, dirtyoldcoins.com, as well as Amazon. It's also on Amazon, and you can Google it. There's a few other dealers who are carrying it now. It's just hitting the market at this point. So, but right now it's available in those places. And
great. Well, I just really commend you for putting this together. It's, as I mentioned before, it's quite an achievement. And before we close, Raziel, is there anything that you would like to tell our listening audience?
Roman coins can be a lot of fun. It's not for everybody. I think that people who like to collect things would find many things that are attractive about owning an ancient coin. The fact that they're surprisingly affordable is one such thing. And I think Middle America especially is very interested in Roman history, and this is a perfect gateway to that civilization, because you can hold in your hand something that was actually made by Romans for their own use, and it can really spark that interest and put it into high gear. Children especially have a very quick and deep connection to, you know, this ancient history once they actually get to touch it in a literal sense.
Well, yeah, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking, is there anything else that actually is still existing from 2,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago?
Not that it's, well, yes, of course there are many things, but as far as acquirable by the average man on the street,
right.
Not typically. Maybe you could find some spearheads or something like that,
mm-hmm.
but coins are typically about it, and maybe some oil lamps or something like that.
But they're not, well, but not as accessible as coins are, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're not going to find a suit of armor or something like that digging up your backyard in Europe. That I would not say is a realistic expectation.
Exactly. Well, gosh, Raziel, thank you so much for spending the time and talking to us. And I know that our listening audience, both the seasoned collectors and the newbies, those that are just really kind of interested in getting into collecting old Roman coins, I'm sure that they found this information extremely helpful. So thank you so much. I really do appreciate you taking the time and talking about your book.
Thank you, Irene. It was a pleasure to be here.
And there you go, listeners. Hasn't this been a great informational conversation? I'm just amazed, as I said before, that Raziel was able to put this book together. And remember, it is the Encyclopedia of Roman Imperial Coins, also known as ERIC II. Please check it out. I know that you'll be thoroughly amazed. This is Irene Watson, thanking you for listening. And I'm with Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.